Well, welcome to this episode of the Building Texas Show. I'm excited to be in San Antonio, Texas today, and really having an important conversation with Amy Herford about Lift Fund. And Lift Fund came across my radar in the most recent Hill Country flood, but really I've been watching their work over the last 12 to 18 months and talking about how to prepare for disasters. And we saw that in the wildfires in California. We see it across the country, Asheville and in Texas on occasion. So I'm excited to be here, Amy, with you and talking about what the Lift Fund is and where it came from.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Justin. This is an important conversation and that will help, the majority of employers, right, small businesses. So thank you for what you do.
Well, and the Lift Fund is just that. It's support for small business.
Yes.
And tell me, where does that come in and how do you support the small business?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Lift Fund is a 30-plus year organization. It was founded right here in San Antonio, Texas. And what we exist to do is help small businesses that are get ready for traditional banking systems. There's a lot of reasons why small businesses and entrepreneurs may not receive the funding yet from banks that they need. So there needs to be a responsible and safe place that they can go to launch their dreams. And that's what Lift Fund exists to do, is we help educate them, provide some capital, and get them on to places where they can build capital and get into the traditional and regulated financial system.
In my work across Texas, I've helped build ecosystems for early startups. And one of the conversations that I have been frustrated with for years is the conversation of bankability.
Yes.
And so many early startups go to the bank saying, hey, I'm here to get a loan for $10,000 because they need basic equipment and startup work.
Yes.
But if they're not bankable, meaning in my phrasing, if they can't stake their house, their home, some form of equity against it,
yes,
it's a tough road for a small business to get their early lending.
It really is. It really is. And it's more types of businesses and more communities than we all realize. For instance, veterans is one. If you are a veteran, sometimes it is going to be hard. And the moving around, the number of addresses can sometimes trip up your ability to get a loan, right? And so, or if you're in certain types of industries, right, that are a little bit more harder to imagine what is success going to look like for you in 1, 5, 10 years. Some of the creative industries are similar to that. Those things need help at the front end more than others. And so that is why they're all very important to our ecosystem. And that is why Lift Fund exists, to help give folks a way into and hope, truly. The first hope that they have is being able to get launched. And that's what we exist to do.
Well, because early founders get a lot of no's, whether that's in their business development role or in their bankability conversations, insurance, everything, because they're having to prove a model.
Right.
But once they've gotten off of that start line, they also need a lot of programmatic help around how to manage the business, because we're not all equipped at birth with, hey, here's a $1 million budget, here's how you manage it.
Yes.
It is definitely an exercise that you learn. And for a lot of the entrepreneurs I found, especially coming out of retirement, being an entrepreneur, or coming out of early college and they're really still not in that world.
That's right.
How do you prepare them in that way? And how do you secure your loans with that education?
Yes. So that is one of the key components that you receive at Lift Fund is education, right? What we call technical assistance. We have teams that will fairly hold hands with our small business owners to say, here's the type of documents that you're going to need. Here's the type. Let's talk about the business plan. Tell it to me and let's refine it. All kinds of ways that we prep small businesses to get ready to launch, or launch one just to exist, but two, to take it to the next level as well. Those are education hours are included for free here for all entrepreneurs. In fact, on our website, we even have a capital readiness question there. It's very short, but because we know that entrepreneurs sometimes are thinking about what can they do for their business in insomnia hours, right? 2 a.m., 3 a.m. So if you just want to connect and figure out what is it that I need to do right now without talking to even a human, it's right there on our website at liftfund.com. You can easily go in to answer a few questions and it'll tell you this is what's your next steps to be loan ready. Yes.
And a key part of your loan program is trying to remove the interest rate.
Yeah.
And in my background, I was able to build a 0% interest rate funding program through a cooperative.
Good.
And it was for energy improvements and things like that.
Yes.
But what a gift to the membership that was. I know it was.
Awesome.
But in your world, a 0% loan to an entrepreneur is skin in the game. You're right in there with them. How do you make that possible?
Well, I've got to credit the funders, right? We don't always have 0% 365 days a week. We try our best to get funders and donors interested in that. There's many ways to help Lift Fund, and so 0% is one of those. You are correct that affordable access to capital really injects economic impact into a community. So we try to talk to communities about how important that is, whether the folks funding it are the cities, the counties, sometimes the state, and then private donors, right, can also invest in ways to help us buy down interest rates for these small businesses. That is key. It's not always that we maintain 0%, but if you keep watching the website and our programs, we release when donors come forward and are able to do that. It's popular, of course, but that is one thing that we feel passionately about, is trying to make it as affordable as possible with the means that we are given to be able to do that for our small businesses.
Well, and I saw it with the city of San Antonio and a municipality agreement, which is amazing for our startup ecosystem here.
Yes.
But then I also saw the conversation around planned giving, which is such an opportunity for business owners and executives that have had a wonderful life and want to leave that foot forward for entrepreneurs.
Yes.
I couldn't imagine a better conversation to have with what could planned giving look like.
Oh, gosh, it is. On our website, there is a video from right here at Trinity University, famous professor of economics, Dr. Butler. He was my professor at Trinity University. Economists know what incredible impact that Lift Fund's work is doing in communities. And it is a badge of honor when they reach out and say, this is God's work you're doing, and they personally give. That is a very flattering seal of approval on our work. And so when Dr. Butler is discussing that he has chosen for his own plan giving to leave a bequest to Lift Fund, it's the ultimate compliment for these small businesses. Of all the ways that you could live a life and then leave a legacy behind, to do that for your community, to make sure people's livelihoods and dreams are a possibility for those who may not have a door open for them, I don't know what better way to leave it. And the ripple effect of doing that into the community and improving living conditions is immense. So yes, planned giving is a very important and very key component to how folks can help their neighbors and achieve their dreams after they're long departed.
Well, and we see that ripple effect that you talk about, and I see it in ecosystems across the state and I'm sure the country as well. But here in San Antonio, I think Alamo Kitchens is a great example of one person really opening the door to a commercial kitchen that impacts 60, 75, 100 other entrepreneurs that maybe hadn't yet found your program and been able to build their commercial kitchen out.
Yes.
And commercial kitchens are a tricky conversation in any community and small business.
That's right. You're absolutely right. So that's a really good example of what you bring up, is if one entrepreneur starts something, how many others can they influence? And so a commercial kitchen being opened thanks to help from Lift Fund and obviously help from the donors to Lift Fund, then now that person has helped provide living livelihoods for other you know, folks that want to practice in their kitchen. And so that is key. We have a lot of stories like that. We have Second Chance, you know, former incarcerated that became entrepreneurs and then now employ others. That is a hard, it's hard to get hired after that. And so that is made possible. They became entrepreneurs and now they open the door for others. We've had, you know, on the community side, daycares, that is sometimes hard to get funding from the traditional banking system. We help launch those. They help mentor and launch others. They get into the traditional system and that helps hospitals sometimes. So Lift Fund is known for microloans, but what some don't understand as well is we make larger loans as well when it benefits the community development. So things like a hospital where maybe traditional financing systems will come in to up to 80%, but get a little skittish on the rest. That is somewhere where a Lift Fund can also help fill in the gap so that the community has healthcare and so on.
I have to think that's a tremendous tool for economic developers around the country when they're trying to build something like a hospital. Could they come to Lift Fund and find support to fill that remaining gap?
Yes, they can and they should. And here's our biggest hurdle is we don't like being a secret, right? Unfortunately, as a nonprofit, I don't have unlimited dollars to buy Super Bowl ads and so on. But this is something that the world really needs to know, because who does have some dollars are predatory lenders, right? And so that is sort of our competition. That is who we're running fast to try to cut in line before. We need help getting the word out that there is such a thing as nonprofit lenders that are responsible and it's safe to be here. And in fact, we have your best interests at heart and we'll do everything we can to see you succeed.
Yes. And you see that in the education that we talked about earlier, in the continued support and community transparency.
Yes.
But let's talk about predatory lending, because that's let's start with microloans. So in the definition of a microloan, I would think that's somewhere from $1,000 to maybe $25,000, $30,000 is an early microloan.
Yeah. And there's various definitions, not to get technical on you, but like SBA has a definition. But in this industry, it's probably up to 100,000 or so is a microloan. Our average, though, is, you're right, the ballpark is between 20 and 30 is what people are asking us for.
But there are areas in every city where you can go and you will see a title loan type lender on those corners.
Yes.
And my fear is a lot of early entrepreneurs.
Yes.
Are pursuing that immediate fast cash need.
Yes.
With that solution. And that is they're not all predatory. I'm sure there's good there.
Right.
But it's not the right tool for an entrepreneur building a business.
That's right. Yes, not all of those are predatory, but you're right. It's not the right tool for everybody. And it's hard to know as a small business, because there's so many, especially the moment that the internet and all its somehow psychic abilities knows what you're thinking about before you even type anything and see it. The moment they figure out that you're looking, you are bombarded with offers and the offers look too good to be true. And you're an entrepreneur who has some hope. And so you start accepting some of these things. And as we know, right, every human, I'm an attorney by trade and I'm still attorneys. We have fine print out the, wazoo on things. People do not read those terms and conditions. It's buried in there and it's reasonable to think they will not read it. And therefore they've locked themselves into something they do not understand. And, there goes, it's not just them that they locked in. It's going to be the next generation, this is some of the saddest stories we've seen, is when they have LinkedIn, not knowing that it is predatory, and then try to come to us for help. And it's tough to undo a lot what has happened when there's predatory interventions. Yes.
Well, and in the business example, you could have a really successful business, but not be getting ahead because of that early loan.
Yes. Yeah, you're right.
I just want to reiterate this. Double down to an entrepreneur that not all dollars are the same.
No.
And dollars with education attached are the best ones.
Yeah, that's right. Because the education, most, I mean, I don't know any predatory that'll kick in education, you know, that will send humans to help you. That's a costly, that's why you have to be a nonprofit to do it. I mean, there's no profit in that. In fact, it costs, and we got to get donations to pay for the lights and the, you know, the humans that are doing that. That is a costly portion of it, yes.
Now, the hard conversation that we're having in Central Texas today is we saw another significant flood in an area recovering from last year's significant event. Yeah. And where I've been in that mix has been around tourism, small businesses, Main Street businesses that aren't prepared for that day. They're definitely not prepared for round two or whatever round three or four may have been in their personal life as well. And that adds up. And so we crossed paths because you were putting out the word that you have grants available for those small businesses. You have opportunities to help them live through that quick moment.
Yes.
Because what I've learned in those scenarios is, sure, there's the SBA and there's lots of things that will come.
Yes.
But they will come in 6 to 8 weeks. They'll come in 2 mortgage cycles. They'll come in 8 payroll cycles. They'll come in after the need has been felt.
Yes, yes.
So how do you show up to, whether it's a wildfire, a flood, a hurricane, whatever it might be, how do we best show up for small business?
Well, I appreciate this particular question because this is something that is coming to the forefront of the nation's mind more and more. And, you know, you might think, well, surely we figured it out by now, but we didn't. We didn't know as a nation yet that the biggest gap in disaster recovery is that we're not prioritizing small business. It is not a key pillar in disaster recovery. Other pillars are there and standard across disaster recovery, your mental health, the housing, you know, these are standard pillars. But what we have noticed and can see over our 30 years of data and over 50 disaster recoveries is you have to prioritize small business, and you have to do so rapidly. The faster you help a small business, the faster you secure the entire recovery of the community. Because in many communities, especially in rural areas, those small businesses are going to be the majority employers. That economy is so linked to how the health of the small businesses are that if we ignore that, we'll be building houses for people that no longer live there. We saw this in Katrina. We saw this. So we know that what humans are prioritizing in their head when it happens to them is, am I safe? Is my family safe? Is my job okay? It's very close to the top. And so we have to take care of their livelihoods. If they just live there with no, how do they spend their living day, their waking hours, and no hope for that, they will move. And we see this often, right?
Sadly, we do. And that results in transfers of land ownership. It results in a familiar business no longer there, so you have to fill that gap. There's so many ripples that are impacted by small business, and a lot of people, I think, forget that small business is the largest employer in the country.
Yes.
And that's anywhere you go in the United States, small business is carrying that community. And we forget that in the moments, and then it really is on that business owner who may have owned the business for 30 years, but they had not had that education. They'd not had the financial discipline to have a year or 2 years in reserve or whatever that might need to be, depending on the disaster.
Yes, that's right. Yes, there are more firms that are small businesses than any other in the United States. And the gap in not including them, it means that we are neglecting our neighbors, our friends. The majority of, you know, most people we know are working for or own the small businesses. And so you can't have an economy without small businesses. That is the supply chain to the larger businesses. And so we have to protect them. That has to be a priority. Otherwise, lives, the ripple effect is immense. You will lose the community's tax base. You will not be able to rebuild bridges and so on in communities if you do not have those small businesses there. You will ruin healthcare because a number of these small businesses are pharmacies, are majorly, you know, anchors, and they are some of the small businesses that get hurt the worst in these. You have to secure these health providers. And if they're married to folks that, you know, are owning small businesses and they decide to move, you're slowly getting the talent away from the community. So it has a massive ripple effect. The children leave schools. This is something we have to secure right away in the first couple weeks, to your point, of a disaster. It can't wait until the current remedies come. Yes.
Did someone turn on a fan?
Oh, it's actually a light that is, looks like it. My comms team trying to help me. Can I pause it and turn it off real quick?
Yeah, let's pause it. Okay. Sorry for your benefit. You're still muted.
Okay, yeah, there we go. Let me know if you need me to reiterate or repeat.
No. It's okay. Great. We'll work around that, but I wanted to catch it before we went too far.
Perfect.
So small business is so critical, and yeah, it is that first few weeks, and it's everything else, because a dollar in a community really does roll out. When we think about employees coming to a community, for every employee, I typically consider five more, like a total of five people.
Right.
And I think that's the same for every dollar in a community when it comes through a small business. Am I understanding that in the same way?
It is interesting, right? So when we look at the numbers about, there are, most small businesses are hosting about four employees. The average size of a family is about four folks. So when a small business closes, you can see the ripple effect. It's times four, and then times four for each of those four. And then here goes, a number of small businesses are linked to 20 other small businesses through supply chains or whatnot. So if the, you know, this is just, if the napkin shop closes down, the restaurants are affected. If the restaurants are affected, and it goes on and on. So that's why, you know, logically, we can see this. I mean, this is obvious logically, but in practice, we're not taking care of to prevent the ripple effect. And it's a dangerous situation to be in, both for people's livelihoods, their mental health, their, you know, quality of life, but the economy itself as well.
COVID really showed us that. And I think a lot of people did really ambitious and heroic things to keep small businesses alive and to make things work. And we're an innovative people. So it was good to see it, but I, my hope is that it drew more attention to how sensitive that chain is and how we all play a role in our communities in that way.
That's right. Yes, COVID was, I mean, that was an excellent example of, you know, but COVID affected, so a difference between this particular disaster and the Hill Country, COVID affected everybody, so everybody was a little bit nervous of how are we going to make it, when is this going to stop, you know, how much is disposable in my income right now, and do I need to, you know, preserve it, because we don't know when this is going to stop. That's a difference between right now, where if we have the means and the ability, then we need to help those who cannot help themselves at the moment. And so that is something that's imperative right now.
So what does that look like? Who should be reaching out to you? One, as in their need. So someone in the Hill Country with small business as an example. Yes. Or on the donor and philanthropic side, we've talked about planned giving, but how do people reach out to you and when?
Yes. Well, we hope that they'll reach out very quickly, especially when you hear about a disaster. One of the things you want to do right away is make sure that you are reaching out very quickly, because as I mentioned, we only have, if most small businesses, and this is the research, have about 10 days of savings on hand. So if we know that, and that's small businesses that have not been hit yet by a disaster recently. So if you have, that research is a little outdated for that, right? And I'm not understanding, I haven't seen the research of a double hit, like a community like this, but I'm sure it will come forward. then if they don't have the cushion, they're not walking in with the cushion, then really time is of the essence. So we need to make sure that dollars are allocated for small businesses and that they're rapidly deployed. So to your earlier question, how do we prepare for these? Well, a big portion of this is we need to set up a fund that exists before disasters and that can be tapped to rapidly deploy grants, essentially, to get the small businesses out of ICU in the first couple weeks. And then we can switch to talking about what kind of capital do they need to rebuild, bigger dollars that are going to be required to rebuild. And we need to do that on the private philanthropy side. But we probably need to do that too on the various state level, state government side. So it'd be smart for a community to try to ideate how to do that in a budget. It would be wise for a state to make sure that they have funds on hand and are budgeting for that. And then on the federal level as well.
Well, your website, you're located here in San Antonio.
That's right.
But you make an impact all across the United States.
Yes.
Do you have any arm outside of the U.S.?
No, actually. But the idea that microlending, that actually came, well, the United States have been doing some form of microlending back since Benjamin Franklin, actually. But the microlending that is famous, if you were to Google it, it happens in India and so on. And it came through Latin America as well. The version that the United States does is a little bit different, but it's tailored for what the United States systems need. And so, but no, we are licensed in all 50 states to be able to provide capital. Most of our work, though, is done right around our hometown here and in all across Texas. And then what we do usually nationwide is we'll be on call as disasters happen when we are called in. So, yes.
Well, Amy, I appreciate the way you are building Texas and the way that your organization is supporting small businesses every day.
Yes.
And doing that good work, but then also stepping up in a time of need and creating an innovative solution that will empower that community to recover quickly.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Justin. We're working hard both with private philanthropy, but also on the advocacy side, talking to the state of Texas, talking to the federal government, and we are tapped for advice from various agencies because we are holding a window into the economy that, you know, obviously the banks are not holding these particular customers and so on. The customers, though, when it happens to a community, the community is hit and they become, for a moment, unbankable in the sense that it's precarious. It's hard to read what's going to happen. And so they will need an injection of capital that rises very quickly. So this is what we need to change and work on is how can we do this all together, both, you know, private and public together? And that rapid relief standing fund would be key to just stabilizing communities wherever they may be that will be unfortunately affected by these storms and even man-made, right, disasters.
Well, I encourage everyone to reach out to their state representatives and their local county representatives and share that thought.
Yes.
If they agree, share that thought and ask how to get involved, because that momentum, those signatures, that letter that you write to your senator can make a significant difference at local, state, and federal levels. So from an advocacy standpoint, that's something we can all do.
Yes, that's a great idea. Thank you, Justin. That's exactly what is needed. Is the conversation has to keep happening in order for this not to repeat itself. Yes.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, and I look forward to supporting the Lift Fund and continuing to spread the word about the great work you do.
Well, thank you very much, Justin, for what you do, and we appreciate your listeners on this, and all of their thoughts and prayers and ours go to the communities affected, so thank you.
We'll pause there. That was easy.
Yes.
Thank you so much for doing it. Hey, it makes me think when you talk about, and I obviously listened to a couple of your videos, but when you're talking about like the Palisades event, and it's like, hey, how do you get injected? How do you get $500,000 injected quickly?
Yes.
And I was an executive at Bandera Electric Co-op, and we use the rural utility services to put together a $35 million 0% interest loan program for our membership. And it made me think that RUS is something that a lot of people don't know about.
Yeah.
And it's a part of the USDA.
Okay.
And there's an organization called the National Rural Electric cooperative association in our ECA.
Okay.
And I could so imagine them wanting to be part of this conversation. They have 42 million members across the country that pay in Roundup funding to community foundations and all that already. Like, if you needed a pocket of money anywhere in the country, start at the co-op.
And that's a great idea.
Everywhere.
That's a great idea. And where do you think I should start to talk?
So there's two out there, Bandera Electric and SeaTech. Okay. There's others as well. But candidly, I would go straight to NRECA. With your brand and the work that you do, I would start with the CEO at NRECA, or I'd look at the past CEO of NRECA, Jim Matheson.
Okay.
But I just interacted with him. I'm looking at his page real quick because this just came to me, and any opportunity I have to say, hey, I can give you some insight.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
I'll come up with it and email you a contact. But
thank you.
I would recommend that. And then on the SeaTech side, that's in Fredericksburg. Tachi is the CEO there. And then Bandera Electric is Bill Hetherington.
Okay.
Amazing people, great CEOs and community builders in that way. But yeah, I would look hard at RUS and USDA funding, particularly through the co-ops. GVTC, Josh might be an interesting person to talk to as well.
Okay.
And he has a very sharp CFO that came out of Oracle.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And would be really savvy on how to talk about cooperative foundations.
Yes.
And how they can immediately be a cash pool for something like this.
Okay. That's a great idea. Gosh, thank you very much. I'm going to get our advancement team on that. That's a great idea. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I appreciate the conversation, the ability to share it. And then, yes, when you're ready, 2 weeks from now or so, I'd welcome the opportunity to come sit down with you and show you what we do with marketing.
Okay, and that'd be great.
It's priced for your clients at that level, small business clients.
Wonderful.
To say, hey, like, let's get the word out about you, because that is, in my entrepreneurial work, the biggest hurdle we've had.
That's right.
Is, well, we need to build a website, and the local marketing company says, well, it's $20,000. And I'm no.
Yes, but exactly.
We want to put out a press release. It's $600 through PR Web. No.
Yes.
How do we get the word out at a community level, at a programmatic level?
Yes.
And then at the individual levels on success, when the time's right, we could build websites for $250.
Yeah.
Build them for free, really. But like, there's a lot that I have always wanted to do and have never found an organization like yours equipped to do it.
Yes.
So I'll be a fan. But
thank
if there's
you.
Ever an opportunity to support from the work that I'm doing, I'd welcome.
Absolutely, Justin. Absolutely. And I hope you'll come back in my orbit really soon. And forgive me if I am running and drinking in fire hoses and so on. I hope you'll come back, because I would love to meet with you, and I want to talk more about, and thank you for your great ideas. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, have a great Friday. Thank you for doing it late on a Friday. And
thanks for the opportunity. Okay. Take care. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.